Hey everybody, Jace here. Before we get into the main episode of New Comics Wednesday, based on just how impactful and how important and the magnitude of the events in Justice League number one turned out to be, you'll hear in the episode, Nick and I go right into talking about it, which was not what we planned to do, just because we couldn't wait to start talking about it and because it is so important and it feels so... just the magnitude of it. It just feels so impactful. So I thought based on that, I would go ahead and put in the interview I did with Scott Snyder at Phoenix Comic Fest so you can get his take on it in his own words, what Justice League number one is all about. I think it's definitely the most important book of the week this week, especially if you're a DC fan. So be sure and pick it up. It's something you're not going to want to miss. So as always, thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy the talk with Scott, and we'll talk to you next time.
All right, this is Jace coming to you live once again from the floor of Phoenix Comic Fest. I'm here with superstar writer Scott Snyder. It's always great to see you, Scott. How you doing?
Yeah, you too, Jace. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Sure. Let's talk a little bit about the kind of the state of the DCU, from Metal to Justice League, No Justice. We were talking about this yesterday. It really feels like the DCU has been turned on its head. Like, you guys just... like flipped over the table and everything is up in the air.
Well, we want it to feel like anything can happen at any minute. One of the fun things about, I think, this moment in comics is that everyone's sort of energized at DC to make you feel like, even though all your favorite characters are back, their legacies are restored through Rebirth, now it's our job to take you to places you wouldn't expect with story. So we want to make sure you feel that, you know, everything sort of connects. Metal connects to No Justice, connects to Justice League and Justice League Dark, Justice League Odyssey, and then spins story out for the next year and a half. But that story we want to feel constantly and excitingly unpredictable. So, yeah, so that's kind of the goal, is to make you feel at once comforted by a kind of our obvious love of the characters and instinct in these books to celebrate the characters and show you how many characters are being included and how the story is kind of one giant immersive tapestry, and at the same time use that as a foundation to take you someplace surprising.
So the other thing I find interesting about what you guys are doing, I mean, both like you and Joshua Williamson, James Tynan, you know, with Metal, they broke the source wall. And then with the way things play out in No Justice, it's not exactly a win.
Right.
And all of a sudden, the rest of the universe has to look at the Justice League like, wait a second, are these guys a hero? Like, are they a good thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, the story isn't so much about, you know, the kind of, like, does the government go against the Justice League, or, you know, are they being attacked by the public? Because I feel like everyone knows deep down at this point, you know, at other points in history, I feel like it's been a really potent thing to kind of examine the nature of superheroism and whether or not it's sort of pure and all of that. But at this moment, I feel like they're pretty accepted as good guys. That said, I think one of the things that makes them so relatable is the fact that in their attempt to, you know, save the world, they'll often break it worse than it was before. So it really is something here where they created a mystery for themselves by breaking the source wall. They don't know if what's on the other side is good or bad. And what they learn very soon in Justice League is that by doing that, the consequences are going to be huge, that the multiverse itself begins to spill out into the void beyond. At first it will be energy, then it will be planets, then galaxies, and so on. So they have to find a way of almost fixing what they did or doing something else that will help the multiverse evolve.
And so Justice League is really going to be integral in the DC going forward. You mentioned yesterday at the panel that you really see Justice League as the connective tissue of the DC universe, and maybe it hasn't been that so much, and you want to bring that back. Is that right?
100%. I mean, I'm very... in awe and inspired by a lot of what's happened on Justice League over the last, you know, 10 years. It's, none of this is meant as a disparaging comment towards, you know, the work that's been done on that book, but I do feel one of the things that went missing in the last few iterations of the Justice League was a sense of connectivity and sort of centrality to the DCU. You know, Grant created the Watchtower when he wanted to show how these characters were larger than life. That was part of JLA's mission as a book, to show the Big Seven and so on. At this point, I feel like it's more important to use the base or the headquarters as a symbol of inclusion and welcoming sort of groundedness. The fact that the Justice League are here on Earth with us, saying whatever these giant challenges are that we're up against right now, the only way we're going to make it through is to think bigger and more more boldly than we have before. And so the Hall of Justice is sort of the core symbol of the whole series in that regard, that it's has, you know, parts open to the public. It has sort of mysterious portals that go to all the teams, but it's deeply connective and open and accessible.
So we mentioned James Tynan and Joshua Williamson, your collaborators on Justice League No Justice. So obviously you've been working really closely with them, but you've got two issues of Justice League coming out in June, and then we've got Justice League Odyssey and Justice League Dark spinning out from that, and each of you is kind of taking one of those titles, right?
So right.
It's you can almost think of Justice League No Justice as the seed story, mm-hmm. and then you guys are splitting off to tell the individual stories, is that right?
Exactly, yeah. We wanted No Justice to be something that was compelling in its own right, and was very much about this moment at DC, where we want the universe to feel bigger, more wondrous, more terrifying than it has before, and about the fact that if the heroes are going to face challenges in this new DC, or they're going to have to think in ways they haven't in a long time, or maybe ever. So that's why it was really sort of, then the secondary purpose of it was to launch the books, you know? So for us, Justice League, Justice League Dark, Justice League Odyssey, and one more book that we haven't announced yet that's coming very soon that we're really excited about, all sort of spin out of the seeds of No Justice. And more story does, too. Green Arrow has a lot of story that comes from No Justice. The Teen Titans, the Titans have a lot of story that comes out of it. So there's a bunch of repercussions that kind of spill forward. But above all, we wanted it to be an exciting launching pad for sort of a new set of kind of big story engines at DC.
Yeah, and if you listeners have been reading Justice League No Justice, you'll know why Scott and I keep using that word seed.
Yeah, right.
So even though the titles are separate, I imagine that you and James and Josh are still going to be like talking and collaborating. It's still one larger story, even though you each have your separate titles, right?
Yeah, well, we kind of weave in and out of each other's stories, where it's one story planned over about 2 years, but the books function really independently, where you don't have to read them all to sort of, you know, make sense of what's happening at all. We want you to feel like if you just want to read Dark, if you just want to read Odyssey, if you just want to read Main Justice League, go ahead. But if you happen to read all of them, you'll see a lot of connectivity that then will culminate in touch points throughout the year where there's very big crossover story between these three books, because they're dealing with the Legion of Doom essentially working against them the whole time from the background, the biggest villains in the DCU trying to sort of completely counteract everything they're doing.
Awesome. I can't wait to read more. Anything else you want our listeners to know about Justice League?
No, I just want to say thanks. I mean, writing this book is honestly the honor of my time at DC, in the way that it's always been the book that's been sort of the golden ring for me. Batman will always be my favorite character above all, but Justice League was the book that always represented sort of the heart and soul of the DCU for me, and the fact that everybody is in it, the fact that it connects all of these other books, that it reflects the best of our DC universe and the stories that are happening in all these other great books, and also drives story into those books, it feels so great to be in that position and to have people seemingly excited for it. So I can't thank you enough, everyone out there listening. It really, I take it very seriously. I promise I'm going to give everything I have to this one. I really hope you like it.
Yeah, and I know you love hearing from fans. So social media wise, where's the best place to follow Scott?
Yeah, well, I'm on Twitter. My handle is ssnyder1835, and I'm on Instagram, same thing, ssnyder1835, and Facebook. So I'm pretty easy to find. I try and post a lot of stuff from the books and answer a lot of questions. So come find me. And again, the Hall of Justice, the doors open June 6th, so I hope to see you there.
Yeah, that's great. And listeners, I'll put all the links to Scott's social media in the show notes, so you can go and check them out. Thanks for your time, Scott. Really appreciate
it. Thanks again, Jason. Yeah.
Comic Source Podcast. This is episode 350, New Comics Wednesday for June 6, 2018.
This is Nick. I'm here too, and I'm glad you started numbering the episodes since it was number 350, because that kind of seems like a milestone.
That's right. Yeah, need to work on that intro. I forgot. I wasn't how I would have said it normally, but I started saying it, and then I remembered, oh wait, the number. So Sorry, we'll work on it, guys.
Right. Hey, I'm a little sick, so
that's right.
Give me a little break.
Nick is making the sacrifice to be here for you all, so I hope you all appreciate it. So let me ask you, Nick, how many books do you have to talk about?
Four.
Okay, I'll go first then, since I have seven. The first one's gonna, well, a couple of them I have a little to say about, because I think that obviously Superman Sunday, we're going to talk in detail about Man of Steel number 2, so I'm not going to talk a lot about it here. And I think this coming Friday, we may do a Justice League spotlight, because holy cow.
Yes.
Oh my God, that book is like, if you are at all interested in the DC universe, you need to be reading Justice League. When Scott Snyder said it was the connective tissue that holds the universe together, he wasn't kidding. The caveat maybe being, if you just read Batman, you can probably get away with just reading Batman, because that's kind of its own little corner. But if you read anything else, like Flash.
Anything cosmic.
Yeah. If you're reading Flash, if you're reading Titans, if you're reading Teen Titans, if you're reading Doomsday Clock, if you're interested in what the greater Rebirth story is, if you're reading Green Lanterns or Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps or Hawkman, any of that stuff. Any of the New Age of Heroes stuff, you gotta be reading Justice League. It's, it was unbelievable. It was so far above and beyond. And I had heard Scott talk about it several times and sat down and interviewed him about it. And I had no inkling about how important and how cosmic and how groundbreaking and universe changing it was going to be, right? Like you always hear that, like, oh, you know, there's going to be this event and the universe will never be the same. And it's often, you know, hyperbole and, you know, hero's killed and then he's back next week and it's no big deal. There's no lasting consequences. This is a regular series that Snyder and company want to make feel like an event. And it's too big for even one book. That's why it spills out into Justice League Odyssey and Justice League Dark, which we have coming next month. And then
yes.
Scott even mentioned that there's another title that hasn't been announced yet that should be announced soon that's going to tie into it. So, I mean, holy cow, man. If you don't want to read all those Justice League books, read Justice League. That's the one that's most important, I think. And as Scott told us at Phoenix Comic Fest, the other stories of Dark and Odyssey and whatever that fourth book is will weave in and out of the regular Justice League title. So you were kind of blown away by it as well, Nick.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of move Marvel probably should have made instead of just renumbering stuff all the time. Like, it's an actual game changer in comics, like more than even like the New 52, I would say. Like, it's not a restart, but it's just everything's different after Metal, and it's fantastic.
And I just didn't, I'm talking to the guys, I'm talking to Joshua Williamson, I'm talking to James Tynan, I'm talking to Scott Snyder at Phoenix Comic Fest, and I'm talking about how they pretty much took the DC universe and flipped over the table, and all the stuff is just scattered everywhere. And it's picking up those pieces and rebuilding, right? But even I had no idea like how accurate that description was. And as you read the Justice League number one, it just keeps building. Like it starts and the heroes are already in the middle of a battle with some antagonist kind of masterminded by Vandal Savage. And it seems important. It seems kind of eventful, if you'd say. And then all of a sudden, it's like that turns out to be only the tip of the iceberg, and there's so much more beneath it. We get Lex Luthor being villainous again. We get a really cool intro with the Hall of Justice on a double page spread. And
it was beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, it's just,
and the description of it, the way like a Superman picked this material. People think it's Marvel.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's calcite from the butterfly net.
Yeah.
Superman chose it because it catches and holds onto light in ways earthly carbonites can't. They
I love that, and like the costumes.
The hall glows like it's high noon.
Yeah, and I won't. That was great.
Yeah, and that was really awesome. I want it to be a real place so I can go and see it.
Yeah.
At night. I mean, it's
completely more physical than it's ever been, I feel.
Oh, yeah.
Don't they use the space station more recently?
Yeah, the Watchtower.
Yeah.
The most recent. Yeah.
Like New 52 era, at least, I think they were using it. Yeah, because I thought Hall of Justice was too cheesy, but really it's awesome.
Yeah, from the cartoon, man. It's awesome. So I guess we should go ahead and give we're going to talk about Justice League first, apparently. Written by Scott Snyder, pencils by Jim Chung, inks by Mark Morales, and colors by Tomeo Morey. It is a bi-weekly book, so every 2 weeks it will come out. And I think Jim Chung and Jorge Jimenez are trading off on art duties. I will say, as far as art goes, I'm used to Jim Chung's stuff looking a little cleaner than this. I don't know if that's just maybe Mark Morales' inks. It's a little bit of a different style, because usually Chung's art is very clean. And it's not to say the art's bad by any means, but it just it wasn't quite as clean as I was expecting. But and the colors aren't quite as bright as I was expecting either. But I mean, again, those are minor quibbles. The story is where this book shines, and the impact and the just the magnitude. That's the word I'm looking for. The magnitude of the events that are happening, and that panel with John Stewart with that bullet that contained a miniaturized omniversal wormhole encased in 10th metal. Oh, wow. Was that an amazing panel? I was like, oh, yeah. Give that giant gun to the Marine. That's it's pretty awesome. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's definitely the inking that's a little bit inconsistent, because if you look at the double page spread that has all the villains, the new Legion of Doom that Scott Snyder's been teasing, that's real clean. They look really clean, from Cheetah to Joker to Black Manta, even Sinestro. You know, normally Sinestro has a lot more wrinkles on his forehead.
And so what an awesome lineup.
So does Grodd, for that matter. But yeah, it's super clean. So, and could you have a guess at all who that is in the basement?
Oh, and the one there is the beginning?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm trying to remember, because I read this right back to back with the last two. No Justice was also blew my mind.
Yeah, so the Legion of Doom shows up, and I love the fact that it's...
Oh, that basement.
Yeah, it's the Legion of Doom headquarters, also from the Challenge of the Super Friend cartoon that Vandal Savage had made, and Lex tricked him. He's like, actually, yeah, it was made to my specifications. It's my base. And he talks about there being someone in the basement, Vandal Savage. The place has no basement. Yeah, it does. And, and weapons from the future in the attic. There is no attic. Yeah, it does. So pretty cool. But yeah, I have no idea. I mean,
what's left of Brainiac?
I don't know.
Does he really not have a place in here right now because of what happened last time?
Well, I mean, the original Brainiac's gone, right? Like, his head is
exploded. Yeah.
It could be real docs, but I'm not buying that. I mean,
he did. So he flew off planet. So unless something big happened.
But I mean, it doesn't the. From the little, what little you can see in that tiny panel, it's so hard to tell. It looks a little greenish.
No, Bizarro is actually out in the wild, and he's not a villain right now, isn't it?
No. Yeah, I guess we'll just...
Doomsday's in the Phantom Zone right now. I forget how it is, too.
We'll have to wait and see, but hope, you know, not too long. But, man, this if there's only one book you buy tomorrow... I think I'd even have to pick this over Man of Steel. That's how I think important and how incredible this book was. It completely blew me away. And again, that's me saying that after I've heard Scott talking about it for, you know, 2 months, talking it up, talking about how important it is, and really having high expectations for it. It somehow still exceeded those expectations. So, yeah.
And Joker has similar taste in jokes to Superman. Where he calls Lex Luthor on his language, just as Superman called someone on his language back in Man of Steel number one just last week.
That's right. I really could have done without Joker, though. I mean, it's Scott Snyder. I know Joker's one of his favorite villains.
Yeah.
Doesn't surprise me that he's there.
And we'll talk about Batman later, but he's much better in this than he is in Batman.
Did you ever watch any of those Challenge of the Super Friends cartoons?
I mean, I probably caught some on like Boomerang / Cartoon. As a kid, Cartoon Network used to just show the old stuff when I was a kid. So yeah, some of it.
I'm trying to remember. I know there was 11 villains.
I wouldn't remember this.
I'm trying to remember if Joker was one of them.
I always assumed he was part of the Legion of Doom. Like, how would you... He's like your A-list villain for if you're DC. At least today, maybe not in this back then as much.
I just don't remember.
I mean, they announced the second Joker movie today.
I saw that.
There are now two Joker movies coming out. That's ridiculous.
I'm like, I don't need one Joker movie, let alone two.
Agreed. Nor do I want him to be in the next Batman movie.
All right. So let me look it up here on Wikipedia, because, again, I know there were 11 of them. So Lex Luthor, Solomon Grundy, Sinestro, Black Manta.
Solomon Grundy.
Cheetah. Giganta, who was a character specifically created for the cartoon. Scarecrow. Toyman. Riddler, Bizarro, Brainiac, now is the humanoid Brainiac.
Yeah.
Captain Cold and Gorilla Grodd. No Joker, as I suspected. No Joker. I don't even remember the Joker being in the Super Friends cartoon ever. Like, I don't know if they just...
Might have been too dark.
Scary or what. But he's in several episodes of Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, they had to neuter him a lot to put him in the animated series.
Yeah, so...
Like, he couldn't kill.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they just didn't think he would really fit in because he didn't really have any powers. I don't know. Not like Toyman was really...
No, or Riddler.
Or Riddler, yeah.
Riddler's smarter than the Joker, but
yeah,
he'd like be the Bruce Wayne of the group, I guess.
So, anyway, enough with my...
Well, maybe it's Solomon Grundy. He's the one who fits the description best is in the basement, but he also wouldn't be anyone's secret weapon.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. I thought you were saying, yeah, what about Sol? I think Solomon Grundy would have been a way cooler.
I think he should be in this version. Yeah.
Instead of the Joker, I'd make that trade in a minute.
I love Solomon Grundy.
Definitely. All right. Anything else we want to say about Justice League before we move on?
No, I'm just really excited. I don't know. It's like Superman of Steel. It's the best issue of Justice. Like, it's converting me to a comic I haven't cared for much in the past, even though I've tried to pick up Justice League multiple times. I used to be such just a Batman fan. I was like, oh, there's not enough Batman in this book. And now I'm like, this is great. There's even more characters. And like, they're using some untraditional people. And like,
yeah,
I love Scott Snyder's voice already because I've read him in 52 issues of Batman Plus. So
yeah, here's the thing about Justice League. So Justice League was the title that launched the new 52. Like, it came out a week before anything else. I think it came out like the last week of August in 2011. And then all the rest of the new 52 title, well, not all of them, but it came out on its own. It was the only book that came out from DC that week. Cause they really wanted everybody to pick it up. And it was Jeff Johns. It was Jim Lee, you know, like super, superstar creators.
It made I've it read
important.
It.
Yeah. And it mattered, right? And all through that run, Jeff Johns was writing Justice League, New 52, all the way through, it mattered. It mattered. It felt important from the initial Apocalypse storyline that tied in with Darkseid and the League getting together, all the way through till the last story, Darkseid War. Kind of bookended with those, you know, dark side stories. It always felt important, you know, Forever Evil stuff, all of it. It felt like it was locked in and it mattered and you needed to be reading it. Then when that came to an end and they kind of had the rebirth, I feel like that was the one title that they never got right. First of all, I'm not the Brian Hitch fan that so many people seem to be. Like, oh, his stuff's so widescreen and cinematic. I mean, maybe he's a decent storyteller. I don't think he's a very good penciler. I can't get past the wonkiness of his faces, especially. And so for me, you know, that's a detriment to the book in my mind. Plus, he's slow. Plus, he hasn't at that point done a lot of writing and proved he could write and pencil a book and keep it on a monthly schedule. So it got to be later and later and later. And I mean, it was even finishing up after they did Rebirth stuff. And then they relaunched the second one. Justice League and Tony Daniel was supposed to be co-writing it with Brian Hitch. And they were supposed to be penciling it together. And again, it was late and just wasn't very good and didn't really tie in. And so I feel like with Snyder back on the book, it's like, okay, now Justice League matters again. Yeah, and not to say those guys aren't talented. Just because I don't like Brian Hitch doesn't mean the guy's not talented. Doesn't mean, you know, I mean, Tony Daniels, incredible penciler. Doesn't mean they're bad storytellers, but man, you lose so much momentum when things are late, you know? And I feel like DC kind of knew it, that he probably couldn't keep it on a monthly schedule. And maybe that's part of the reason that it didn't really tie in a lot with anything else. It was kind of off on its own. So I'm glad to see it not only tying in, but being like the central book again. It feels like it's so important. It's a must read for sure.
Thanks. I agree. The last time I tried to read Justice League was I picked it up when Rebirth started up again.
Yeah.
So I picked it up again. And I read like half the storyline and I was like, nah.
Manny and I, same thing, man.
I'll save the money.
Like two or three issues and we were just like, this is awful. It just wasn't very good. So anyway, what do you got next?
I got Batman. I'm going to do it in the order I read it because it kind of reveals the story in a different way the order I read it.
All right. Go right ahead.
Okay. So obviously Tom King is writing Batman currently. Michael Yanin is art and cover. June Chung is color. And Clayton Cowles is letter. It's a heavy Joker-heavy story, but it's not one that I actually like, which is surprising for me because I'm a big fan. Like, I liked the, what was it, DC Nation number 0 Joker story, which directly leads into this, basically.
Waiting for
and that was a very similar story, but Joker just, I don't know, he's not written. It doesn't seem like Joker half the time. And Batman definitely doesn't seem like Batman. It's an odd comic. Because it's simply Joker, it's following DC Nation number 0, where Joker was being crazy about the invitation for the wedding, and it wasn't actually an invitation. He goes into a church and kills everyone just to get Batman's attention. And even does when Batman shows up, he even does like, nah, 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 Batman. And, you know, Batman shows up and he like just starts telling him stories about how his mom told him about love and going on about how he killed his mom. And that's just like, and then it's just a long conversation, like, it's just neither character really acts like themselves. Joker says some weird stuff. Like, I don't know. It just doesn't feel like either of the characters I know. Joker's, I wasn't a big, I've been a big fan of the Batman issues leading up to this. The Booster Gold stuff, the gift was great, but.
I mean, it's still Tom King. And
yeah.
Michael Yanin, I'm pretty sure he did that DC Nation
Joker
story. So this is the same creative team. I wonder why it feels so wildly different in tone to you. I mean, I haven't read it, so.
I guess it's Batman more than the Joker. Is just, maybe it's because he's getting married. He's just making stupid decisions in it. Like, when he should be shutting down the Joker, he's just making stupid decisions.
Wait, and maybe, didn't we just talk about this the other day about how you don't like your Batman to fail? Was that you that said that?
No, that wasn't me. We didn't have that conversation. I don't think I feel that way. I like to see Batman fail a lot.
Maybe it was James Tynan. See, this is the problem. I talk to too many people about comics. It was James Tynan. Yeah, when I interviewed him at Phoenix Fan Fest, he talked about
I should take credit for it then.
There are. He said there's a subsection of fans that don't like to see Batman make mistakes because you know he's Batman. He doesn't make mistakes. So. So yeah, they just feel a little out of character, huh?
Yeah, I'm fine with them making mistakes. Like, some of my favorite stuff are the origin stories, like the year one, because you get the retelling where like he's screwing up and almost drops someone off of a thing or almost gets beaten to death. Like, I love that kind of Batman, but he just makes such a stupid decisions that it just feels, not that he's a fallible individual, which Batman should be, he just seems like he's acting like an idiot in this comic.
Does it still feel like a Tom King Batman book?
Yeah. Yeah, because the Joker story is pretty great. It's just some of the things he even says, or maybe more of his actions more than what he says, just seem like... I do like seeing, like, I don't feel like the Joker is shown this brutal as often, like in the beginning, like him just murdering people in the church. That's good, but something he said later really struck me wrong. I can't remember exactly the precise thing. Okay. But mostly I think it's Batman's behavior. But, and like the art, I love the art, but again, I still have issues with the way this book is colored, Batman. It still looks like it's a cel-shaded video game, like the Batman Telltale game and not an actual.
All right. Hold on. Let me take a look. The other thing I was going to say is, you know,
Tom. So normally I love this title.
Tom's going to be at Denver Comic Con in a couple weeks. So save all your criticisms and we'll go up and, you know, be like, Tom, what the hell, dude?
Yeah, that's a great idea.
why'd you screw this issue up so bad?
I loved every other issue.
What do you think of that Frank Cho alternate cover?
I love the alternate cover. I think, if I'm thinking of the right one, let me go. I actually might be thinking of the Justice League one.
It's the black and white one.
Yes, the black and white one. I love it. I don't like the actual cover. Again, it has that, like, it looks like a cell shaded video game, not like a. I don't know. It's a weird look.
I guess I see what you mean. They're pretty muted. It looks.
That's the characters. Like, the scenes look great.
It's almost sepia tone. Like. Yeah, I mean, I'm so far behind on Batman. That'll be what Tom will be like. Well, have you been reading? I'm like, no, Tom, I can't
even remember the last. Because, yeah, the end of the Booster Gold stuff was great. I recommend 2 weeks ago's issue that I wasn't here for. It was fantastic.
It's just, I know Batman is so good because Tom's writing it.
Yeah.
And I'll read it because, you know, Tom's a friend. But I don't know how I got so far behind on Batman. I really don't. I think the last issue I'd read was somewhere around issue 20. So I'm almost 30 issues. Almost
30. Two issues a month, man.
What was the
catches up?
What was the No, I guess I read through the end of War of Jokes and Riddles.
I like that.
So the last issue I read was where he gets Selina's answer finally. So that's around 30, right?
What?
That's around issue 30, because what 23 was where he asked her, right?
I think so. I don't know the issue number. It's a few months ago.
I'm not that far behind. I'm only like 18 issues, like 18 issues behind. I don't know. I the coloring really doesn't bother me.
I don't know why it does me. It looks like Batman the Telltale Game, and I don't want a comic book looking like a video game. That's like all. It's just weird. This is the only comic that has this like effect on me.
Wait. I mean, so you haven't liked Jun Cheung's colors like for a while then? I mean, she's the regular colorist.
No, I haven't liked the look of this book for a long time.
Okay. So whenever she colors it is when you don't like it.
Yeah. So, and some of the shots are fine, but normally when it's a full character shot, they're too washed out. So it is, since it's a flat color, it looks like they're kind of, because you know what cell shading in video game is, right? Or like, it's like Toon Link in that Zelda game where he's all cartoony. It's like where your face is only like three colors maybe.
Right. Yeah.
And it looks very colored on a computer and not necessarily, which I know they are probably.
Yeah, because you said you really enjoyed the art on the previous arc. And that was Tony Daniel. But I don't know who did the colors. Maybe Tomeu Mori. Does that sound right?
Maybe. It was definitely somewhat different for the Booster Gold stuff. I guess you're right, before that looked just like this.
I mean, because I know that those colors were a lot brighter.
I did like that better. That has a very distinct look compared to this, just being in the center of this. Because I actually really love the way they drew. I mean, Booster Gold looked awesome too. The way they like kind of made him look ratty and stuff. That was a great read. The last storyline.
Yeah, Tony Daniel, Floria was the inker. And Tomeu Mori. See, I might not have read it, but I still know who the creative team is.
That's great. Yeah. That's me, like with me in movies.
Yeah, so Tony Daniel and Danny Mickey and Sandu Fleurier on inks with colors by Tomeu Mori. So, yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's not even that Mori's colors are so much brighter, but they are a little more vibrant.
So, like the yellow on Boost, yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like Tony Daniel's an interesting artist too, because his art here, like I haven't even opened this issue before, 47, and I'm looking at it here right now.
Yeah.
This is more clean than I've seen his art in a long time. And so it kind of reminds me a little bit of Mikhail Yanin's art, because Yanin's art is so clean and smooth. So I wonder if he's doing that purposefully or you just wanted to try something different.
Cause that's almost like a stylistic choice. It's just,
yeah, that'll look real good in the trade.
Yeah.
To Yanin. It'll look pretty seamless. So, all right, well, let's move on. I'm sorry you didn't like Batman 48.
Let's spell Batman. So I didn't dislike it.
We'll ask Tom about it. Now we're not going to give Tom a bad time, but I mean, I'm curious.
Please don't.
No, I mean like, hey, curious about feedback on 48. Some people thought Batman was kind of making some strange choices.
This guy.
What are your thoughts, Tom? We'll see. We'll see what he has to say. All right. Let me talk about... So this is an interesting one. Stowaway to the Stars, an original graphic novel from John Byrne, IDW. It is a... What did they call it? Let me... Do I have it pulled up here? I do. So they have it titled John Byrne's Stowaway to the Stars, a graphic album to color. So, you know, the coloring books have been all the rage over the last, I don't know, it's been probably 2-3 years now. So this is basically John Byrne art that you can color. And so he's got a little text piece on every other page. And then on the facing page is art, his artwork to color. So if you're a big John Byrne fan, it's definitely recognizable as Byrne. Personally, I would have loved to have something like this if it was John Byrne drawing, like, let's say, the Fantastic Four, Superman, She-Hulk, even Wonder Woman would have been great. The fact that it's these, it's a space story about a little girl who stows away on a freighter. And there's aliens, and I don't know. I guess this is just the stuff that he wanted to draw. There's no recognizable characters, right? These are all original characters that he created. And so it's not the most fun thing to draw. And as much as I love John Byrne back in the day, his stuff isn't as good as it used to be. You know, that's part of getting older sometimes. And that being said, this art that he has in this book is more interesting and it's a better rendering than I've seen from him in a while. But some of these pages, man, it looks like it would take forever to color. I mean, he's as detailed as ever. As I said, I think it's better burnt art than I've seen from him in years. And it looks like it would be a lot of fun to color. The story is pretty generic overall, but I think if you're buying this, you're more buying it to color than you are for the story. So it'd be interesting to see some of these pages colored if some of his fans start like putting up the pages online. So it's $7.99, which isn't completely outrageous for a book these days, not when we have Amazing Spider-Man for $10 for issue 800. So I think it's 50 pages, I think. So you probably have about like 22 pages to color. So it's pretty solid. And they're all splash pages, I should say, all the colors that you all the pages that you have to color. So if you're a Byrne fan, it's definitely a must have. I'm a Byrne fan. I'm not really into coloring. I don't really have the time or the patience really to color this. I mean, take a look at it, pick it up, thumb through it at your comic store. You'll see what I'm talking about. Some of the pages, man, it's just like, wow, take you a long time to color all that stuff. So I guess if you're an aspiring color, it'd be someplace you could show your skill. All right. What do you have up next, Nick?
I have another Batman book, because I think all my books are Batman-themed this week, because I only had time to read a select few. This week, it's Nightwing versus Hush, which is Batman Prelude to the Wedding Part 2. I actually read them out of order, because that really doesn't matter. There's like one reference to the other. But it starts as a fan. This is where I say I'm exploring them in the order I read them, because I kept asking myself during Batman, how does the Joker know about this wedding? Like, I thought it was actually Bruce and Selina getting married, but these two books actually make it clear that it's Batman and Catwoman are publicly getting married. Bruce and Selina are not going to be publicly married because you can't have a billionaire with a former thief. So, like criminal, et cetera. So, but like this kind of like both books are still kind of exploring. The overall thing is exploring how Joker found out while the stories are actually just fun one-on-ones between a Batman foe and a Batman ally. So like the first one was Damian versus Ra's al Ghul. This is Nightwing versus Hush. It starts with one of the most awesome storylines ever, which is Superman and Nightwing taking Batman out for his bachelor party, all in costume, to Bat Burger, which Superman does say is a bit repetitive of Super Burger in a Metropolis. But it's just fun that he's rented the place out. It's the only other Batman fans there who are also in costumes. Like, there's the, who's the guy with all the polka dots on? Is he literally like, is he like Polka Dot Man or something? Like, there's someone dressed as him there.
Crazy Quilt?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, yeah. Because I've seen Walt Flanagan draw him for Kevin Smith book. It's the only other time I've seen Crazy Quilt. And then also there's someone dressed as, I can never remember her name. Is it Carrie from Batman? Dark Knight Returns?
Yep.
Someone's dressed as her Robin.
Female Robin.
Even the sunglasses. And she's like, nice suits, when she sees them walking in their actual suits, thinking they're also just costumers. But otherwise, yeah, it starts as a fun bachelor party, but things go south when Hush shows up because he's jealous. He wasn't invited when Nightwing and Superman were, because, of course, Hush feels like he's the closest to Batman of all.
Yeah, so, you know, looking at that, I don't think that's actually Crazy Quilt, but I'm not
sure. Isn't that like, I've seen him before. I think it was a Walt Flanagan drawn comic by Kevin Smith, because Kevin Smith always tells Walt Flanagan to give him a list of characters he wants to draw, then Kevin Smith writes to that. So
yeah, I don't know. We'll have to ask Tim Seeley next time we see him.
I think he was featured in the Lego movie, as was the character over by the condiments. It looks like he's Mustard Man or something, who's an actual thing according to the Lego Batman movie.
Yeah. I'm not up on my Batman villains as much as I should be.
I only know those because the Lego movie made fun of them. So yeah, I enjoy, like, it's fun to watch Nightwing and kind of Hush face off, both work together a little bit, face off, and like kind of hash out stuff, even if it doesn't necessarily end up well for both of them. But yeah, I liked it more than Batman. So, but not as much as Justice League, because Justice League was amazing. I forget to give the creative team, I have that too. Yeah, it's Tim Seeley is actually writing. Isn't he normally an artist? Or does he do both?
Yeah, he does both. And he hasn't done much art. I mean, he's much more a writer these days than he is an artist.
So I remember we talked about him on one of the podcasts. I thought it was the artist one, maybe.
Yeah,
but
it was, because Jay picked him as one of his favorite artists.
That's why I recognize the name. But then it's written by artist is Travis Moore, and colors are Tamara Bonvillain.
Bonvillain.
I like the art here. I have no complaints about the art.
So Hush shows up at the Batman-themed restaurant. Did they know?
No, after they leave in an alley.
Okay, because I was going to
say. Superman gets distracted by an explosion across town, and then when Superman's gone, Hush comes down the alley because he planned wherever the explosion was.
Got it.
But no one in the restaurant's harmed.
If Hush walks into the restaurant, wouldn't you just think it's just somebody else cosplaying?
Yeah, but it's different when he's walking down alley with a grenade launcher on his shoulder.
Yeah, that's a totally different kind of thing. Did you, because you weren't on last week's New Comics Day, did you read Ra's al Ghul or Damian and Ra's?
Yeah, to catch up to this, I accidentally read them in the wrong order. So like I said, they tie in a little bit, as in like the common theme that's kind of just one page or two is how did the Joker find out about the wedding? But otherwise, they're just fun 1v1s that kind of deal with, almost examine Batman's two sides through the character, which is kind of fun.
So what did you think of that? Was that one? I mean, I heard a lot of good
things. I like that one too. Yeah.
I heard a lot.
I mean, a lot.
I can't believe that I didn't order that one. And I mean, normally I wouldn't order all these one shots anyway. I would probably just read my review copies and call it good. But I didn't realize it was Brad Walker on art, who's, you know, Brad's a friend. I love his art. I
looks great.
Everything he does. I, you know, bought his Demon miniseries that he just finished up. So I totally would have got it. I totally missed it. So I'm hoping when I go to the comic store tomorrow that they'll still have copies and I can pick up a copy. But Damian fighting against his grandfather, huh?
Yeah, that was last week's. Yeah. Great. Yeah,
pretty solid.
Yeah. They're both pretty, like, yeah, they're just, I mean, they're not, like, the most important books to the overall Batman storyline.
Right.
Because you can just assume the Joker found out, and you don't even ever see these fights. I'm sure it won't play into the plot. But it's just, I guess, fun tie-ins I actually enjoy, where sometimes tie-ins can be a chore.
Yeah,
so
fair enough. All right, next up I have Demigod number 2, written by Ron Mars, art by Andy Smith, colors by Michael Ataya? I never know how to pronounce his name. It's Ataye. So this is a really, really fun book. I covered issue one. I feel like it's been more than a month since issue one came out. But basically, the story is there's this lovable loser, really skinny guy. He like works as a like a waiter at like a wing place, you know, like sells chicken wings, sports bar kind of place. Friends with the manager, has a crush on one of the waitresses that works there. But I mean, guy's just kind of a loser, you know, like he, like even if you're like super skinny and you don't have a lot going for you and you work like fast food or whatever, at least take some pride in your appearance, personal hygiene. I mean, this guy's putting on, you know, yesterday's underwear and stuff like that. Really just not up on the social, you know, niceties of things, and just, you know, doesn't really seem to have a lot going for him. Not the sharpest knife in the drawer. And so, but he goes to work, and then this three-headed dog beast thing shows up with a bat that's apparently, or no, I'm sorry, there's a bat on the wall that used to belong to Babe Ruth, apparently, because, you know, sports bar, memorabilia, whatever. And this dog's like attacking this guy. And the guy is, for once in his life, his name's Jason McAndrews. And for once in his life, he's trying to like do the right thing and be like more than he can be, so to speak. So he tries to protect the girl that he has a crush on, and he grabs the bat off the wall. And when he grabs this Babe Ruth bat, the bat like transforms him. He gets like super muscular. The bat transforms into like a suit for him, and that's kind of where this issue picks up. And he ends up kind of winning the day, but he's so over the top, right? Like, this guy's been bullied his whole life, and now he's, you know, through the course of this issue, he discovers, ah, I've got super strength, I'm invulnerable. And, you know, it's just like, what would a random schmo who got the beat down be like, you know, if he all of a sudden was a super powerful being? So he's way over the top, arrogant, thinking he's all that all of a sudden. And I got to imagine that hubris is going to end up being his downfall. But that may be part of the story that Ron Mars is going to tell, you know, about this character's arc, you know, his growth as a character, kind of learning to not be a douchebag, basically. Because so far he's a super douchebag. But it's really fun, right? Because we know that he starts off as this, you know, wimpy guy, and his reaction to all of a sudden being a superpowered being is very realistic. And the book is just a lot of fun. The guy, the character, demigod, Hercules, he's so over the top. It's complete Deadpool breaking the fourth wall. You know, he kind of narrates the story at the beginning and end of each issue, saying, ah, this is a great story and I'm the best thing ever, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. So it's a lot of fun. It's a really fun comic. The Andy Smith art looks great. The colors by Michael Adia are very bright, very vibrant. A little on the primary side, but it suits the type of book and the story that they're telling. Incredible storytelling by Andy Smith, and great dialogue by Ron Mars. So I really recommend it. They did a Kickstarter for issue one, where you could if you bid on the Kickstarter, you got like a hardcover of issue one with a bunch of extra bonus material. And then they released a regular issue one, now issue two. Again, it's from IDW, from their Ominous Press imprint, which is owned by Ron Mars and Andy Smith and Bart Sears, and I think there's one other guy involved. So we did a Kickstarter spotlight on it a few months ago. So if you want to know more about the story, you can go back and look for that episode. But it's a lot of fun. I'm really glad that it was on my radar and I picked it up. So what do you have next, Nick? One more Batman book?
Yeah, well, Batman's in the name of the storyline. Because it's Deathstroke 32. Batman versus Deathstroke, 3 of 6, I believe. And the variant cover is pretty awesome. Even though it looks like it would be more likely to feature, based on my own experience, the Punisher or Daredevil on it, it's just a very awesome pose.
Is it Francisco or Francesco Mattina that does the variant cover?
Let me see.
One of the Virgin variants, right?
Yeah. It's Francesco Mattia, yeah. It's great. we're in the continuing storyline of Deathstroke versus Batman. This issue is called The Seven Wanes. The basic storyline is Batman is shutting Deathstroke down because someone planted some evidence that says Deathstroke is actually Damian Wayne's father. And so Batman's, I don't think either men believe it at this point, but Batman's been investigating it, and they got into a fight last issue, and basically Batman said, I'm shutting you down. So he's basically trying to save all of Deathstroke's marks before Deathstroke can get to them or always be there on the scene. But the book gets its, and I've enjoying this book has these great, almost like a Kevin Smith movie. It just cuts to black for a panel and like has a title and then gives a location and the time. So it says, Mr. Coot, Madrid now. And it'll do like every few pages, it'll like set you up or like,
that's a total Christopher Priest thing. He first started doing that.
Okay.
Back
in- yeah. I've seen this in,
he did it
in other comics.
Yeah. He did it in Quantum and Woody was the first time he ever did it in Valiant back in the '90s. And then, yeah, he used it in Black Panther.
Where would I have seen it? I wonder. Cause I've seen it before.
Yeah, I mean, other people have copied it too, but it's definitely a Christopher Priest.
I love it.
Christopher Priest thing, yeah.
I was going to ask about that too, because I was going to list, I forgot to list the team, and I was like, isn't Priest Christopher Priest?
Yeah.
Or is he just going by Priest now? Is this like Prince? Or
he's going to be at, have you ever met him? You've never met him, right?
No, of course, I've never met any of these people.
He's going to be at Phoenix too, or Denver Comic Con.
Denver?
Yeah.
The closest I've gotten is tweeting with comic book people and listening to you talk to our friend Brian Edward Hill. But
all right, go on.
So it's Priest's story. Pencils are Carlo
Pagulian.
Wow, I wouldn't have gotten that. Roberto Vicara. And inks are Jason Pez. I don't know. It's fun. It just continues to be a fairly, it's fun to have a fight, like match between Batman and Deathstroke. Cause they do have a lot in common, and bringing Damian into the, Damian is both enjoyable. I don't know. He's enjoyable as a subject of this. And he was enjoyable in the prelude I was talking about, but interesting. I actually didn't know this versus my Reddit, and normally I wouldn't see this in a DC or Marvel comic. They just assume you know where you're at, but it actually says this story takes place prior to current events in the DC universe.
Yeah.
So it's obviously set before the wedding.
Yeah.
Is their point.
I think that's what they want.
And also whatever is happening in Justice League, I'm sure, which will split the world open.
So at this point, like I was when I heard about this story, I was rooting for Deathstroke to be Damian's father, just because maybe that would remove Damian from the Batman. Because I just don't like Damian as a character. I don't despise him like I originally did. But there's not much that Grant Morrison did in his Batman run that I care for. And Damian would be really high up on the list. So I was rooting for him to actually be Deathstroke's son, or to find out he's not Deathstroke's son or Batman's son. He's just some Joe Schmo, and can we just shuffle him out the door? Like,
We're close to that point right now. I don't think he's either. I can't remember exactly. I don't think he's been proven to be either. Like, someone just produced evidence towards the end of the book that he's not Batman's.
Oh, but, I don't know, though, man. That's
really, and it's an interesting person who presents it too, I'll say, but I won't say who presents it.
That's really rolling back the clock. I'd be really
interested. I think it's a ruse, especially since he's like the Damian Ra's al Ghul issue starts with Selina Kyle taking Damian shopping for like his wedding,
yeah,
like outfit. So I mean, it's not like he's been written out if this book takes place earlier.
Exactly, and I just think it's been too long, and there's too many people that are big fans of Damian to have him. I mean, even if it turns out he's not Batman's biological son, I still think they would keep him as the son. But now that that's kind of been established, and we're halfway through the story, I wonder like. So, yeah, he's not Deathstroke's son. He's not Batman's son. So what's the mystery now?
Yeah, well, I think if the mystery is where the info is coming for, if it's reliable or not from where it's coming from, maybe, because I'm not even exactly sure what happened in the final pages.
And it sounds like anything that you've learned so far could be complete misinformation. Yeah.
But it's called the Seven Waynes because Talia al Ghul has to know he's Bruce Wayne, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, she's acting like she doesn't know that. Well, so she's trying to tell Deathstroke that he is Batman. Deathstroke's like, don't be ridiculous. He's like, pulls up a photo. He's like, you see this? These are seven pictures of Bruce Wayne. You know, and all were taken at the exact same time. Like, Bruce Wayne could be anyone. Batman could be anyone. It doesn't, like, he uses as evidence that he couldn't possibly be Bruce Wayne because there are 1,000 people pretending to be Bruce Wayne. And it's a fun moment where she's basically telling him his identity. And that's sort of like, that's impossible. That makes no sense.
That's pretty good. I really tried to get into the Deathstroke title when Rebirth started, because I'm a big Christopher Priest fan, but I don't know. It just it I I couldn't get into the narrative. And then by the time I heard that it was really getting good, I was so far behind. I mean, I kept buying it for a really, really long time. I think I finally dropped it like around mid 30s. But I still had the review copy, so I definitely could catch
it. Yeah.
Put it on the list.
Exactly.
All right. Next book I'm going to talk about is Death and Glory number 2, written by Rick Remender, art by Ben Gall. And so this is the second issue. First issue, we met Glory. She was kind of raised off the grid, so to speak, like by her father, who was a trucker. And it's not like a post-apocalyptic future, but it's definitely set, you know, a few years in the future. Things aren't great in the United States, you know. So maybe in that way, it's kind of realistic with the way things seem to be headed right now. But anyway, Glory is raised by her father. He was a trucker. She knows cars. She knows, you know, 18-wheelers. Very much kind of outside the law, kind of living, you know, on the fringes of society kind of thing. And her dad needs a new liver. And so she decides that Glory had been married previously, and her ex-husband was like a complete scumbag into all kinds of crooked stuff. And so she overhears him talking about what she thinks is a drug deal, and she goes to try to knock over the drug deal and steal the money. And things don't go exactly the way that she hopes, and she ends up losing the money. The money gets like blown up, basically. And so she steals the truck that was exchanged for the money because she thinks it's full of drugs. And it turns out that it's full of people. It's human trafficking. So that's where issue 2 picks up. And I got to say, I mean, there, in a way, I liked issue 2 more than issue 1. And I know I shouldn't dislike issue 1, but it's my type A personality. When things go wrong and are messy, it offends my sensibilities of, no, this plan needs to be A, B, C, and everything needs to fall into place. And when things get messy, it bothers me, and I know that's just my personal thing. But the story was interesting enough, and great art by Bengal, who is a great sequential storyteller. So 2 didn't have that kind of – like the mess has already happened. She's kind of already pooped the bed, and now she's trying to figure out how she can make things right, how she can still get some money. And in the meanwhile, the bad guys are – we get much more insight into what exactly the human trafficking is all about, who's involved, and they're planning their revenge on her. And there's a couple of crooked lawmen that are involved as well. And so they've got that tension going on. So I enjoyed issue 2 more than issue 1. And I think I'm in for issue 3. The only reason I kind of hesitate is because there was this really weird scene in the middle of the book. And I'll tell you about it after, Nick, because I don't want to spoil it for anybody. But if you do read it, you'll understand what I mean. And it was just really weird and like totally not my thing. And I haven't read like a ton of Rick Remender stuff, but it, like, it's happening, and it's interesting the way he frames it, because there's dialogue going on, and in the background this thing is happening. Or not in the background, I mean, it's what's happening on the pages while you're reading this dialogue. They're talking about something completely different, and the actions are doing something else. And it's just like, wait, is what I'm seeing happen really about to happen? Like, what in the actual heck is going on here? And if there's a lot more of that in the book, I'm telling you right now, man, it's not my bag, and I'm out. Like, it was just too weird for me. I can't do it. And although the story is good, it's not like super compelling that it's enough for me to overlook that weirdness in the middle of the book. So I know I'm being like incredibly cryptic and vague because I don't want to ruin it for people that do want to read it. But I will say this, this book's not for kids. Book is not for kids. That's what the weirdness has to do. I would not want my 6-year-old daughter seeing that sequence at all. No, not even for a second. So, you have anything left, Nick, or was that it? Because I know you.
Nah, that's all I had time for with my vertigo.
Let me do. I have two more, and then I'm gonna. I'll briefly mention Man of Steel. So Curse of Brimstone, number 3, writer Justin Jordan, art by Philip Tan, colors by Rain Barreto. This is another of those DC New Age of Heroes books, and so I just did my order, my DCBS order for, I guess it would have been August, right? Like I ordered it in May. No, I guess for July. I just ordered my books for July. I did not order, I think it was Curse of Brimstone number 5. Like I was going through and I'm like, you know, I always put everything I'm interested in and then I, you know, it's like $300. So, you know, I have to always trim back. Cause the other thing is not just the monetary aspect of it. It's like, I literally am running out of space. Like I can't buy every book physically that I want. And a lot of times at this point, to be honest, I'm buying physical books to support creators that are friends. And so it's just tough. Like I'm running out of space. I need a bigger house.
You can always give me some, like just a long box or two.
If you want to drive all the way over here,
because I'm no, it's to carry on.
Yeah, I have to get a whole nother seat. So anyway, this has been probably my least favorite of the New Age of Heroes, I think, which really surprised me because it's Justin Jordan, whose stuff, you know, I usually really like his stuff. So anyway, I did the order. I didn't order number 5, and then I read number 3, and I'm like, oh man, why didn't I order number 5? Now I'm gonna have to pick it up off the rack. Because it's like I forget like just how good it is, and 3 really upped the game. It really upped the game. That's what I'll say. The other thing that's interesting to me about it is Philip Tan. So he's inking himself on this, and again, I just go back and I'll talk about this with Man of Steel too. You know, I just had that long conversation with Jonathan Glapion at Phoenix Comic Fest about pencilers inking themselves. Here's a perfect example. Every time I've seen Philip Tan's art before the Curse of Brimstone book, it's been way better than this. And it's not horrible. It's just super messy. It's not as clean. And and because of that, I feel like the storytelling suffers. The facial expressions aren't as sharp. I'm not getting the emotion in the faces that I normally get from his art. And I think it goes back to the fact that he's inking himself. I think he would greatly benefit from having somebody else ink him. So it's just too bad that's becoming having an inker on a book is becoming the exception rather than the rule. But if you've been reading this book, you're not sure what's going on. So basically, there's some mysterious group that goes around to towns that are kind of failing, and they find people desperate in those towns, and they kind of convince them to make a deal with the devil, so to speak, and they give them powers. And then those powers end up destroying the town. And so that's what's happening here. But the main character, Joe, is very close with his sister and tells his sister about it. And she's kind of like a no-nonsense. She's really, I feel like, the hero of the story as opposed to Joe, who is the one that's turning into Brimstone. And she's really like the no-nonsense person that's really going to save the day, really the hero of the book. And with what happens in this issue, it feels like a big turning point. It feels like issue 1 and 2 were just set up for this issue. And so I mean, I'm glad I ordered issue 4 because it's really going to tell me if I'm going to continue reading or not. Cause as I said, I thought I was going to drop it, but yeah, it was pretty solid. That being said, I don't know that I could recommend it yet though. I'd say, you know, wait till next issue and I'll let you know. And then it might be one that you'd want to pick up and trade, but it's pretty interesting and it feels like a Justin Jordan book, finally, after reading issue 3. Let's see. The next book I'm going to talk about is Man of Steel number 2. Or no, I'm sorry. The Unexpected. Another New Age of Heroes book. This one written by Steve Orlando with pencils by Ryan Sook and Kerry Nord. And then we've got inks by Mick Gray and Wade Von Grobiger with colors by FCO Placencia. So again, New Age of Heroes book with a bunch of new characters. Foremost among them, Firebrand. We also meet Viking Judge, another hero named Neon, and a final one named the Ascendant. They're all new characters, and this looks like it ties into metal very much. They're talking about nth metal. They're talking about 10th metal. We see Hawkman still as the Hawk God. A very dark book. I could easily see this book tying into Justice League Dark, because it's all about magic. It's all about the demon or the devil of Thanagar. Seems to be the one kind of behind the scenes pulling the strings. But it's just one of those wild and crazy action-packed magic books that don't come around very often. So I would guess, based on the narrative of the book, that Steve Orlando had a heck of a fun time writing it. And I can't actually wait to talk to him about it at Denver Comic Con. So this is one that I definitely recommend. Pick it up. It's a book where you're going to read this first issue and you're going to know immediately. It's either going to be like, yes, this is awesome, I can't wait to read more, or you're probably going to dislike it pretty strongly. So I loved it. I thought it was great to see these new characters to get thrown right in the middle with a ton of action. I mean, Ryan Sook and Kerry Nord are both incredible artists, and, you know, great storytelling, great visuals, the coloring. There's a lot of, you know, magical lightning that glows, and some really cool visuals. So, I mean, it's worth it just to pick up for the pictures of Hawkman as the Hawk God, if nothing else. So definitely recommend picking up The Unexpected, number one. All right, now the aforementioned Man of Steel, number two. Let me give the creative team, written by Brian Michael Bendis. We've got pencils and inks by Doc Shaner for pages 1 through 13. Jason Fabok does a double-page spread, pencils and inks on pages 14 and 15. And then Steve Rood finishes up pencils and inks on 16 through 24. So I'll talk a little bit about the art first. First half of the book, art is absolutely incredible. Jason Fabok pages are Jason Fabok pages. I mean, the guy is absolutely amazing. And the problem is, the art is so good in the first half of the book and the Fabok pages, it makes Steve Rood's art look that much worse in the back. And again, I've never seen Steve Rood's art look, I don't want to say this bad. I'm going to say this unpolished. His stuff usually looks a lot cleaner and a lot better than this. And so again, just like with Curse of Brimstone and Philip Tan, I feel like Rood might maybe suffering from not having an inker here. And that might not be 100% correct, because I know on his Nexus title, I think he inked himself sometimes on that. But maybe it's just a matter of the way the story is constructed. Like right off the bat, he's got to draw this alien environment with a lot of weird looking creatures, and the panels are very crowded. There's a lot that Brian Michael Bendis, I'm assuming, is having him put in these panels. And so it might be the fact that we're seeing things that we're not familiar with, you know, looking at aliens, and, you know, there's a scene in an alien cantina, with weird looking bottles and all kinds of weird looking glasses and cups and weird looking aliens. And so it's not doing Steve Rood any favors to have to draw this crowded stuff, you know, without the benefit of an inker in these very small panels. The art gets a little better when it's Superman just flying through the air. But then again, when we get to the action scene, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 panels on a page, which in of itself isn't that strange, except that the bottom 5 panels are very narrow. So it basically cuts the bottom 2/3 of the page in 5 equal size vertical panels. And then you've got 4 panels above that that are also vertical that get gradually smaller as you move from left to right. So it's a lot of stuff to stuff into some very narrow panels. And with Steve Rood's, his line weight, you know, he tends to use pretty thick lines. It just doesn't work for me. It just, It looks crowded. It looks busy. It doesn't look good. His art needs much more room to breathe. I feel like they didn't do him any favors with the way the story was constructed. There is a page with Perry White that's only basically three panels that works much, much better. Again, his art has a lot of room to breathe on that page. But other than that, every other page that Rude does is packed to the gills with panels and action and characters and word balloons. I did not enjoy the art in the second half of the book. As far as the story itself, interesting is what I'll say. I feel like we got a great start in issue one to the story. Toward the beginning of the book, we're getting a little more of that story, and then it feels like it completely shifts gears, and Bendis takes us into kind of establishing some other aspects of the Superman world. You know, we get a lot of scenes at the Daily Planet, and we do get that scene with Jason Fabok talking about what potentially happened to Lois and Jonathan Kent. So I could get more into the story, but I want to save it for our Superman on Sunday episode. So if you want to hear more about details, definitely tune in for that. Plus, I can go more into detail there because obviously as this is being released, this is, you know, the same day that Man of Steel 2 is coming out. Whereas if we talk about it on the Sunday Superman Sunday episode, you've had 5 days to read it. So no excuses to have not read it by then. Have you read Man of Steel 2 yet, Nick?
I don't think I have it yet. I think I only got sent the first one.
Let me look.
I look forward to it, just like I look forward to Justice League 2, because now I'm totally into these characters.
I thought for sure that I sent it to you.
I may have missed it too. I've obviously been out of sorts.
No, you're right. My bad.
I thought you wanted to save it maybe for the Superman Sunday. I didn't question it.
Yeah, I definitely would send it over so you could comment on it. But yeah, definitely look forward to Superman Sunday talking more in depth about the story. So
I'll have a lot to say about it then. Let's say that.
All right. Fair enough. Okay. Let's do a quick rundown of other titles you may want to be on the lookout for Wednesday, June 6th. This is the first time I've done a New Comics Wednesday episode in a long time that I haven't mentioned any Aftershock comics in detail. Not to say there isn't stuff worthwhile. Cold War number 5 is out tomorrow or today.
I wanted to read that, but
it's an interesting.
I still have to catch up on the other.
Yeah, it's an interesting tale, as is Dark Ark number 7. And we also have Shipwreck number 6 from Warren Ellis. Also coming out tomorrow is the hardcover Insects Year 1 hardcover. It basically collects the whole series. And the only reason I didn't talk anything about Insects is because we should be having Marguerite Bennett on soon to talk about the series as a whole. Let's see. Over at Boom, I guess. Where we're gonna? Yeah, we've got a new Garfield miniseries. If you're a fan of Garfield the Cat, it's Garfield Homecoming number 1. Hey, there's a lot of Garfield fans out there.
This makes me think of Spider-Man Home. This is the time I think of Spider-Man Homecoming. So I'm like, I'd love to see that Marvel movie, Garfield Homecoming. They could do it right.
Meanwhile, at Dark Horse, Dark Doctor Star and the Kingdom of Lost Tomorrows, number 4 of 4, wrapping up that miniseries set in the Black Hammer world that Jeff Lemire has created over there. It's his own interconnected superhero universe. And from I haven't read any. I've got a lot of the stuff. It's become highly recommended to me. I mean, it's Jeff Lemire, and that stuff's selling like gangbusters. It could be the next hot thing. So if you haven't checked it out, I definitely recommend that. DC, we mentioned Batman 48. We mentioned the Prelude to the Wedding, Nightwing versus Hush. I talked about Curse of Brimstone. Man, we pretty much covered everything here. Deathstroke 32 was also mentioned. Here we go. We've got Green Arrow number 41. We've got Green Lanterns number 46.
We left out all the green characters.
We got Harley Quinn 43. We mentioned Justice League. We've got the next issue of Ben Percy's Nightwing with number 45. And we've got a Wonder Woman annual number 2. over at IDW, in addition to Demigod number 2 and the John Byrne Stowaway to the Stars that I mentioned, Star Wars Adventures number 11. I know Nick talked about a previous episode of that he really enjoyed. And we also have...
But it is a kidsy book.
Like, yeah.
This isn't Marvel Star Wars.
Star Wars for kids, for sure.
Yeah.
And we also have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 63 over at Image. Medieval Spawn and Witchblade number 2 we'll be talking about on Top Cow Thursday this week. We also have Spawn number 286 as well as Walking Dead number 180. Marvel's got a new number 1, Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Oh.
Number 1. We've got Dazzler X-Song number 1 as well. Captain America 703 from Wade and Somni. Another Deadpool number 1. Another Doctor Strange number 1.
Gotta love it.
Immortal Hulk number 1. Well, there hasn't been an Immortal Hulk before, but another Hulk number 1. This is all of Marvel's fresh start titles, so we'll see how long.
I have a Marvel book to recommend.
Before they reboot again. We also have Hunt for Wolverine, Weapon Lost number 2. We'll be talking about that on the next Hunt for Wolverine spotlight episode. Rise of the Black Panther number 6 of 6, wrapping up that storyline. And a couple of X-Men books. We've got Weapon X 19, X-Men Gold 29, X-Men Red number 5. And you said you had a Marvel book?
I do. It's trade paperback. But everyone needs to pick up Tales of Suspense featuring Hawkeye and the Winter Soldier by my buddy
Matthew
Rosenberg.
That's right.
It's great. It was one of my picks of the week on one of the first ones I was ever on. It's a buddy cop tale of Hawkeye and Winter Soldier searching for Black Widow who should be dead. And it's one of my favorite books.
Is it 5 or 6 issues?
I think it's 5.
5 issues for $15.99. Definitely get out there and pick it up. Let's see. What else? From Valiant, last thing I'll mention, Valiant High number 2 of 4. I think that is a weekly book because issue 1 just came out last week. So that's it for the new releases. Before we go, just one quick bit of news. When we had Charles Soule on to talk about both his debut novel, The Oracle Year, as well as Hunt for Wolverine, he did mention that there was an announcement coming up really soon, and that news finally dropped today, and that is The Return of Wolverine. So come to find out, Death of Wolverine was the first chapter. Hunt for Wolverine going on right now is the second chapter, and then we've got Return of Wolverine. It's a 5-issue miniseries coming out in September from Steve McNiven and Charles Soule. You know, that's the same creative team that killed Wolverine and Death of Wolverine. So we've got that coming up as well. So The Hunt for Wolverine, I thought that was going to basically end with the Return of Wolverine, and perhaps it still will. But there's more of the story to tell coming from Charles and Steve. And whether or not there are more series that tie into that Return of Wolverine is yet to be determined. I think with the Death of Wolverine, it was the 4-issue Death of Wolverine story, and then he died at the end of the 4 issues. But then you had three or four, I think, might have even been 5. But you had a number of miniseries spin out of the Death of Wolverine, talking about the fallout of the death. And now with the Hunt for Wolverine, we've got a bookend Hunt for Wolverine one shot. We've got a Hunt for Wolverine Death's End bookend to end the event, and in the middle we've got 4 4-issue series: Weapon Lost, Adamantium Agenda, Misty in Madripoor, and Claws of the Killer. So it would not surprise me, based on the fact there were miniseries that tied directly into Death of Wolverine, we've got miniseries tying in directly to Hunt for Wolverine. It would not surprise me in the slightest if we get some miniseries that come after the end of Return of Wolverine, or some one-shots or something else, something beyond just 5 more issues to wrap up the story. I mean, it is Wolverine. He's one of the most popular and well-known Marvel characters. And, you know, much like Bruce Wayne, there's like 7 of them. 7 Wolverines. So
love it.
So that's all. I mean, the announcement just came out today. That's all we know, that it's a 5-issue series. And I think there was a quote from Charles in the news release that said, when you come back from the dead, it should be kind of momentous. You know, there should be some weight to it. And so we look for the return of Wolverine coming in September. So I imagine what we'll probably do is just keep right on going with our Wolverine Tuesday spotlights when we finish up the Hunt for Wolverine. That'll be that finishes up at the end of August, and then we'll go right into September with the return of Wolverine. And so I guess we've got months of Wolverine yet to come for all you listeners. So
hells yeah.
All right. Well, we want to thank you all for listening as always. Don't forget, you can go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. While you're there, be sure and check out all our other coverage on TVs, movies, all that kind of great pop culture stuff. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where we can be found on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three places are great spots to follow along with our episode releases, as well as all our convention coverage. Quick reminder, Nick and I, in case you didn't catch on as we were talking about it throughout the episode, Nick and I will be at Denver Comic Con coming up on the 15th, 16th, and 17th of June. Please, please, please let us know if you're going to be there. Hit us up on Twitter or Instagram. Track us down. We'd love to meet fans and listeners and hook you up with a free Comic Source lanyard. So can't beat that with a stick. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.